One of the problems is that there's no forensic diagnostic capacity in Western Australia that's able to be utilised by courts for reports. Courts require evidence of an impairment if they're to take it into account in sentencing.
Because, as you said, and we know that FASD's not a recognised disability, that just can't play into things. It's not a recognised impairment. But even though you've got these apparent signs, and that might help explain the actions of a young person, but that must be frustrating in many ways.
Well, I think serious injustice is done where there is no assessment and diagnosis of the young person and the adult, because at law, the court itself is not able to make a diagnosis. I might be well read about FASD. I might be able to tell you about the different types of behaviour and secondary effects that correspond with FASD, but I can't from the bench read a report from, say, a youth justice officer and look at a young person and go, ah, that person's got FASD, and then factor it into sentence. I have to have an expert that provides a report, an assessment, a diagnosis that says, you know, having undertaken, you know, various tests and interviewed the young person, you know, they meet the diagnosis. And then the court can factor it into sentence. So in Western Australia, without any, you know, standing or readily available diagnostic capacity, young people and adults who may be suffering from FASD, that diagnosis is not being done, the court isn't being provided with the evidence, and therefore factoring it into sentence.
So, Catherine Crawford, now with your Churchill Fellowship, what will be the scope of your research?
Right, well, I'm delighted that the Winston Churchill Memorial Trust has granted me a fellowship. So during next year, I hope to travel to New Zealand, the US and Canada to look at the way that courts, focusing on young people, are dealing with FASD young people, looking at whether there are special arrangements in terms of diversion, whether there are special measures for Indigenous people with FASD, looking at whether there are specialist courts, whether special arrangements are made in the custody environment, so detention facilities for young people suffering from FASD, and whether there are special arrangements for post-release supervision of FASD-affected youth. Canada in particular is the leader in this area. Most recently, there's a Yukon MP that is proposing an amendment to the Criminal Code of Canada to enable courts to take FASD into account as a mitigating factor in sentence. So it's definitely the place to go and learn what they've been doing in this area for the last 20 years or thereabouts.
Do you suspect that Australia's lagging behind in the way it deals with FASD through the justice system?
It's more than suspicion, it's a reality. We're well behind.
Yeah, okay. And is it possible that out of this fellowship you will be recommending changes or trying to implement changes?
Well, I hope to learn from the Canadian experience. I'll be doing a report with recommendations. The first step now is we need diagnostic capacity that's available for young people and adults, so that young people in the education sphere, where, you know, it doesn't have to be justice, can be assessed and diagnosed. And through that, their particular disadvantage can be identified, the strengths and weaknesses of that brain can be recognised, so that whether it's teachers, clinicians, or those in the justice arena or care and protection, can then work with the young person. Anecdotally, lawyers and others you know, say that there's a significant proportion, particularly of those who are in care, who suffer from FASD. But at the moment, that's anecdotal and really it's guesswork.